Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go. It's hour number 3. We're live. It's the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1. Joy, I'll talk more about Mike Tomlin making fun of USC. Not making fun of USC, but making fun of all the writers who said he'd be up for a USC job. He had a great quote. She'll do that in 30 minutes. But it is interesting. I was thinking about this. People, listen, we all have, I go to YouTube like everybody else, or I listen to old music. I'll go to my XM Sirius, and I'll play like 70s, 80s music, and it takes me back to my high school days or college days. I understand there's a connectivity to our childhood.
Of course.
And I get it. Like, I get it. I'm not really who I am. I don't sit around listening to classic rock and roll. I know people like that. I like hip-hop or new country. I'll listen to anything, but I like new music. And I don't watch old movies. I watch new movies. So I don't have – I'm not what you would call it a traditionalist.
Yes.
I'm not a traditionalist. I tend to be maybe a to a fault the other way. I'm looking for new stuff. I get bored very quickly. I'm not going to romanticize the past. Maybe it's because I had a weird childhood and I don't want to look back.
Don't look in the rearview mirror.
Yeah, I mean, it's maybe I need a therapist. But the point being is, it was so funny to listen to all the names that come out. Oh, Jeff Fisher. And I'm like, okay, are you watching football? It's an offensive game. I love Jeff Fisher. But when he left the NFL, it was like, could not get a job. And I mean, this is a well-connected guy because very outdated offense. This is a Pac-12. Even as good as USC was, who do we remember from USC? Matt Leinart, Reggie Bush. It was an offensive program. The defense was fun, but we all talked about Reggie and Matt. Okay, it was all that. It wasn't about the defense. Nick Saban now acknowledges. Nick Saban acknowledges, I can't stop anybody. So, then Pete Carroll, he's 70. Even with Russell Wilson, the offense looks outdated. So it's like, folks, look what's happening for these jobs. Like, look what's happening. Mario Cristobal, offensive side of the ball guy at Oregon. He's been a big hit. Chip Kelly, UCLA, finally has a pulse. He's an offensive guy. Lane Kiffin, Ole Miss. He's an offensive guy. Like, and again, you can say Nick Saban. Nick has been brilliant acknowledging, I can't win with defense. This is, by the way, not a very good Alabama defense by Alabama standards. What Nick has really done in the last 6 years, hired great coordinators and recruit the heck out of the quarterback wide receiver position. Their defense this year is not the story. It's their offense. So, I know we romanticize Jeff Fisher and Pete Carroll, but if you're asking me who I'd hire, I say this all the time. Look in the NFL right now. I mean, look around the NFL right now. What coaches are we going, what's going on? Brian Flores, defense, Vic Fangio, defense, Ron Rivera, all could have had a quarterback. Yet McVay lobbied to get a better quarterback. Cliff Kingsbury lobbied for Kyler Murray. It's the offensive coaches now that are overwhelmingly controlling this league.
Well, I think because USC is such a high-profile job, it feels very scary to go with someone who doesn't have a very long resume, even though they may be the right person for the job. You're going to go to default what you know, which is how Mike Tomlin's name got put in this.
So this is very interesting. This is a very interesting thing. I want to talk to everybody about this. This is very interesting because I had a friend call me the other day and he said, he's a smart guy. He runs a business. He said, it's not a good year for candidates. And I said to my friend, Brian, it's never a good year for candidates. Did anybody know Mario Cristobal? You didn't even know who he was. I think he got demoted at one point in the Alabama staff. He's a home run at Oregon. You didn't know. When Pete Carroll got hired for USC, I can remember being on a plane. I was going to Mexico with friends for a weekend. I'm like, what a terrible hire. He just got fired in the NFL. Pete Carroll's one of the best coaches ever. You never know. Like, when Urban Meyer goes from, like, Florida to Ohio State. But did you really think that an old crusty coach from Cincinnati would turn Notre Dame back into a top five program? Brian Kelly's face turned purple. He coached at small colleges. Cincinnati was in his 50s. Brian Kelly, he's the best Notre Dame coach since Lou Holtz. You just don't know. It's, I mean, Tom Coughlin coached it. I remember him coaching at Boston College. They beat Notre Dame. Notre Dame was number one. And you're like, all right. And then he goes to Jacksonville, and you're like, oh, he made the playoffs. And then he goes to New York, and it's like, oh, they beat Belichick twice. Who would have guessed Tom Coughlin, who gets mad and his face looks like a plum? He's purple. He's windblown. He's grumpy. He's like a Hall of Fame coach. You do not know. So everybody, and this is why fans go back to what they know. Well, Jeff Fisher won a bunch of games in the NFL, and Pete Carroll was good here, and Mike Tomlin was good here. Folks, sometimes you get so surprised. I had never heard of P.J. Fleck. I don't know who he was. He goes to Minnesota, and I mean, when James Franklin was at Vanderbilt, I don't know who James Franklin was. Now he's like a rock star. So I understand everybody going back to Pete Carroll and Jeff Fisher and Mike Tomlin because we know we've got memories of winning. But if you're asking me what I would do, I would go get a young, smart offensive coach. And I'll say it again. I would get Doug Peterson, who's still really young. He coached under Andy Reid. He went to Philadelphia. He won a Super Bowl. With Nick Foles, he out-dueled Brady and Belichick, and he's been on the beach. He's made good money. He kind of is a laid-back guy. I think the college thing, he's not too power hungry. He's not too rigid. He'd come to LA. He'd play big. He's got kind of a Chip Kelly vibe where he's kind of cool and smart. But Mike Tomlin, by the way, was asked about this job, and I couldn't believe it got so much. I mean, listen, it was on the Dan Patrick Show and Carson Palmer, so we know who they are, and it got some momentum. But, I mean, Tomlin literally was almost offended by it. Here's his thoughts about it today.
Any point in your coaching career, did you ever have an interest or express an interest in being a head coach in the college game, and do you have any idea how that may or may not have led to folks like Ryan and Doug Whaley and Carson Palmer connecting you to some college jobs?
Hey, guys, I don't have time for that speculation. I mean, that's a joke to me. I got one of the best jobs in all of professional sport. Why would I have any interest in coaching college football? That'll be the last time that I address it. And not only today, but moving forward. Never say never, but never. Okay? Anybody else got any questions about any college jobs? There's not a booster with a big enough blank check.
Anyone else? All right.
Thank you. Anybody asking Sean Payton about that? You know, anybody asking Andy Reid about stuff like that?
And I think, you know, it's really funny. He was kind of pissed. And what he's basically saying is, I'm the Pittsburgh Steelers coach. You think I'm a college coach? And to be honest with you, the best coaching is in the NFL by far. Like, it's not close. Like, in the NFL, you can have – I mean, this is something I've talked to coaches about. Like, in the NFL, if you have a bad first half, a coach can literally flip the switch and you can have a great second half. You can correct flaws in a half, in the locker room in 15 minutes. In college football, it may take a month if the coaching staff can change a problem. You can never do it in a game. Like, it takes, like, weeks of figuring out. And maybe it's because the kids are young. But in the NFL, I've seen coaches, literally, you watch the first half and you're like, this is terrible. I mean, New England's never scored a touchdown in the first quarter of any Super Bowl game. And the second half, you're like, they're moving up and down on the Legion of Boom. You're like, what? I think Mike Tomlin's saying, you think that job, they get me? I'm Mike Tomlin. You think I'm going to take that job? I think he was offended by it. And he's not wrong. Like, Sean, would we ask Sean Payton? Would we ask Andy Reid? And again, let's stop looking backwards for the next coach. If you want a coach, everybody's always reaching back. Go find a young 29, 31-year-old. Call Lane Kiffin again if you want. I mean, he's done a really good job in his last two jobs. But I understand the romance of it, but the answer rarely in life is trying to duplicate the good old days. It doesn't work with movies, tech. It doesn't work in sports. The good old days, A, are never as good as you think. And the truth is, once people get rich and successful and stuck in their ways, they're often not as good the second time around, or not as good as a new play. You know, people forget this about Nick Saban. Nick Saban went to Michigan State. He was successful, but it's not like he made him into a power. And then he went to LSU, and I mean, the fourth year in, they were losing like 3-4 games. He won a national title. He failed in the NFL. So he had a lot to prove to Alabama. Like, he was a recruiting you know, 90-hour-a-week guy. So he went into the NFL with something to prove. Pete Carroll, by the way, had been fired twice in the NFL. Pete Carroll went to USC with something to prove. You think you're going to get that same Pete now? Pete's got $60 million in the bank. He already succeeded. You're not going to get the same Pete Carroll. Pete's 70 now. You're not going to get the same Pete. Jeff Fisher, he's got money in the bank, NFL pension as a player, as a coach. You're not getting the same Jeff Fisher. And Mike Tomlin, I do think, would crush. But I guess my point here is the answer is rarely in the rearview mirror. Go work hard and find the next special person. That person's out there. You just got to interview, and you got to look, and you got to beat the bushes. But that guy, you wouldn't get the – literally USC fans yesterday, let's get Pete Carroll. You're not getting the same Pete Carroll. You're not getting 50 – you know, how old was he? You're not getting 51-year-old Pete Carroll who just got fired. People thought it was a terrible hire. They laughed at Pete Carroll. He had something to prove. You're not getting that Pete Carroll at 70. You're getting a guy that's got massive money, a house on the North Shore, on one of the islands in Hawaii. And by the way, I already won here. You're not getting all those 16-hour days that you got with a 51-year-old Pete. I'm off my soapbox. There we go.
I think Mike Tomlin was certainly offended.
Yeah, it's like
I think he felt it was disrespectful to be asked about. And the reality is he wasn't placed in this. It wasn't like a rumor. It was just said like he would be someone that USC might swing for. And then it became this whole thing.
Yeah. I mean, let's just be honest. They would be lucky to get him.
Lucky. It'd be a miracle.
It'd be like, you know, it's funny when I was doing the Brady thing yesterday, he said something and I'm like, oh, my God, he's right. So I was on this, not a panel, but I was one of 12 or so people that got to ask Tom Brady one question. And one of the questions was, his answer was, you know what I want before I leave this game? A Hail Mary for a touchdown. He goes, Aaron Rodgers gets like one every third week. He goes, I've never had one. And I'm like, Tom Brady's
really?
And I thought, we got to send our staff on that. Has Brady never, now, by the way.
I mean, I think he would know.
I think he said, he goes, Aaron Rodgers, I swear to God, he's had, you know, a dozen of them. He goes, maybe I can't throw it that far. I've never had a Hail Mary. And I thought, is that true?
I don't know. But I think he would know if he feels that strongly about it.
Yeah. All right. Off my rant now.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Tonight, the World Series begins with the Braves making their first appearance in over 20 years while the Astros look to reclaim the crown. Game 1 tonight at 7:30 Eastern on Fox and the Fox Sports app. David Ortiz is putting $25,000 on the line for Game 1 on the Fox Bet Super 6 app. Scan the QR code, download the app, and answer 6 questions about the game. Before the first pitch later tonight on Fox, for your chance to win Big Poppy's money, call on who wins and by how many runs.
Astros at home. I'm gonna go Braves 4-3. It'll be one of the. I think there's gonna be runs in this series. 4-3, Braves win. I don't know who wins the World Series. I know everybody roots against Houston, but you know what? It's like when people used to say, "Oh, Deflategate, Patriots." Yeah, but they kept winning after that, and after Spygate and Deflategate and whatever, Morongate. In the end, you got to win games. Houston keeps winning game series and ending up like in the World Series.
It's unfortunate because you are right. They're a great baseball team, but that's
their legacy.
That's what happens. Like, the history is written.
Yeah. By the way, I saw this. Derek Carr, in his final two games against Gruden, was 0-2, 2 TDs, 2 pick, 75 passer rating. Derek Carr's last two games without Gruden, he's the best quarterback in the league. 33 a game, 2-0, passer rating at 127. And it's interesting because Josh Jacobs, the running back, said last week, he said, without Gruden, there's less anxiety on the sideline. And you know, I mean, Gruden from those emails was not the most progressive, updated guy, obviously. But it is interesting when a coach has so much power and authority and is intense. And Gruden, I mean, his literally under intense, it's a picture of Gruden. He's an intense guy. It's interesting to watch the Raiders play, they're a loose football team. I don't want to overreact. It's only two games. But I've always been a fan of Derek Carr. I think he moves well. Reminds me a little of Joe Burrow and Tony Romo. Moves well, accurate, can feather it over a linebacker, can throw it deep down the sideline, sees the entire field. I mean, he's a grown-up. He's a top 10 quarterback in the league. But I will say this, is that three coaches in the league, the most powerful coaches in the league, are Belichick, Pete Carroll, and Gruden. One contractually, two a legend, and three Pete Carroll runs Seattle, right? All three meddled a lot in personnel. All three drafts last 5-6 years, way more than average whiffs. So I think I always said this. I thought Gruden was gone for too long, and I thought he had way too much power. I do not think you want to give even Belichick too much power. I think you need a scouting department. Coach here, GM there, scouts do the job, and Belichick largely acknowledged this year that he had relinquished some of his personnel power back to the other side of the room. But it is interesting. Derek Carr, who's always been good, has been fantastic post-John Gruden. And, we talk about teams needing quarterbacks. Let me tell you something. That's a good job. I get Derek Carr. How often do you get a job in the NFL with a legitimate top 10 quarterback? Like, Mike McCarthy got Dak. That's way better than average. So, I mean, like, Raiders have weapons, Derek Carr, new stadium, no state tax. You got good winter weather. You don't have to worry. You know, you can build your team to play modern offense. You don't have to worry about playing in snow. We talk a lot about, people said that the Jags job was finally attractive because of Trevor Lawrence. Well, the Raiders got a guy that's already great in the league. That's a job. That's a real job. Got the quarterback figured out. Everything else kind of finds its way. Joy with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
What were we talking about looking in the rearview mirror?
Do not look in the rearview mirror.
With the Raiders and John Gruden?
No. Yeah.
Didn't really work out. So Tom Brady became the first quarterback.
That's a good point.
Ever.
Yeah, the Raiders went rearview mirror on that coaching hire.
Exactly, rearview mirror. Yeah. Like, literally, like, right, we already did this. Let's just run it back.
Yeah. And you never get the same person when you do that, by the way. A 38-year-old hungry John Gruden is not a 60-year-old or a 58-year-old John Gruden who's rich and gets all the power. You just, like...
Despite the idea, and it is a romantic idea, that everything just stays the same in your little universe... It's not. Everything is constantly changing. And everybody doesn't like change is sometimes horrible and sometimes it's hard and sometimes it's great, but it is inevitable. And if you refuse to acknowledge that, then you put yourself in situations where you make bad decisions because you are living your life in a reality that doesn't exist.
Right.
So when you make decisions based off of solely what your experience was in the past, you are not evaluating what the current state of the world is and your organization and the players that you have. And that person is not the same person.
I mean, USC fans are nuts. They're Pete Carroll at 70 is not Pete Carroll at 51 with something to prove. You're not getting the same guy.
No. So Tom Brady became the first quarterback to throw for 600 touchdowns, but... this fan that mistakenly got the ball is coming out pretty much the winner in this situation. So Bucks personnel went and negotiated with the fan, Byron Kennedy, and promised him some swag. But Brady thinks he should have held out longer.
Byron realized he lost all of his leverage once he gave the ball away. He should have held it and then just get as much leverage as
amateur
possible.
Amateur move. Yeah. Yeah, so, if he would have held it, he would have been sitting in the Tom Brady suite for the rest of the season. But amateur move on his part.
Hey, I think it worked out pretty well. It just showed kind of what he got right there from it. But I'm also giving him a Bitcoin, which, I mean, that's pretty cool, too. So at the end of the day, I think he's still making out pretty well.
So what he has gotten is now around $100,000. So he's getting two signed Brady jerseys, a signed Brady helmet, another jersey autographed by Evans and Evans-worn game-worn cleats, a pair of season tickets for the remainder of 2021 and all of 2022, $1,000 credit to the official team store, and a Bitcoin, which at the time was worth close to $63,000.
First of all, two Tom Brady signed jerseys in 10, 15 years. Those are $50,000. I mean, by the way, that's very kind. I mean, Tom, that's a lot. You know what I mean? You can go out
It's ridiculous, the idea that he would keep this ball, as we discussed yesterday. And I think it's great that they're doing all this, But it's becoming a little crazy. Like the idea that he would keep that ball. Like you're just going to walk around with that ball. You're going to sell it. So apparently it's supposed to be worth more than $500,000. A collectible CEO predicted it closer to $750,000. So if that's, I don't know.
Congrats.
Yeah.
You
own
a ball that doesn't, I don't get it. Okay.
But the Bitcoin's kind of cool. I'll take a Bitcoin from Tom Brady. Did you ask Tom Brady for a Bitcoin yesterday?
I did. I got one question. I was not going to go Bitcoin. I don't even know. I don't even understand. I don't even understand.
Yeah, you didn't
Bitcoin.
Ask him about the backwards hat.
I didn't want to mess around. This is the goat. No, my question.
I think what you did yesterday is an example of how you do everything when it comes to your career and your show. You take things very seriously. I'm not being sarcastic at all. Colin is one of the biggest preppers in the business. And he took it very seriously, and it was a great question.
He gave us a five-minute answer. And it was I could not believe how. I even texted Jim Gray this morning. I'm like, you know, thank you. I mean, Tom went for 5 minutes on it. It was very thoughtful. It was like, God, he gave me like three rants for the week. It was a really thoughtful answer.
So Sunday's loss for the Dolphins came down to a final field goal, but Tua did play well. And Coach Brian Flores is saying that he is showing that he is improving as a player.
I think he's getting better. I think he's getting better every time he steps on the field. I think he's pushing the ball down the field more. I think he's making better decisions. I think he's making quicker decisions. I think he's doing a lot of things. You know, look, it's, you know, 12, it's a small sample size. But every time he steps out there, I think he's, you know, I see progress. He's a young player. Everyone develops at a little bit different pace. But I think, you know, I think he's doing a lot of good things.
Where are we in the Tua conversation at this
point?
Well,
we're in a place where a third team may jump in like Washington and say he's better than Taylor Heineke. It's not all over for Tua. Somebody, you know, this is smart. If he plays well again this week, because the last 2 weeks he's completed 75% of his throws and he's played pretty well. Let's say Tua puts up a third and a fourth game, because by the way, he puts up at least a third game. Trading deadlines in a week. So they make the deal. So a third game, and he looks good this Sunday. And Sunday night, you have till Monday morning to make a trade. And somebody goes, it's better than Taylor Heineke. I mean, I'm just saying, he picked a good time, Tua did, to play his best two games as a pro.
Yeah, he's playing through fractured ribs. He's playing well.
Yeah.
But this is my question with Miami, though. Like, it's clearly over in Miami at this point. This conversation has gone on for so long.
Feels like it, yeah.
So, you know, you already botched the development process of Tua in Miami. So at this point, you're just building up his trade value, which is ridiculous because this is exactly what Tua should be doing, which is developing and getting better. But you skipped all that with the Ryan Fitzpatrick nonsense, and now you're in the Watson conversation. So I don't even know how it moves forward in Miami. They face the Bills on Sunday, and they are currently 13.5-point underdogs, according to Fox Bet. So that will be a tall task for the Dolphins. So Jake Paul is I want to call him a boxing sensation. I feel like that's a lot, but he has become something in the fighting game, and he's certainly garnered a lot of attention. He just fought Tyron Woodley, and some more UFC stars have been linked to fighting Paul, and now Nate Diaz
tough
is on
guy.
That list.
Tough dude.
I don't think that would go well for Jake Paul.
I don't know. I kind of think I like Nate Diaz. Nate Diaz, a tough dude.
And I absolutely like Nate Diaz in that fight.
And a big chin. Well, he can take a punch.
It hasn't been announced or anything yet. Dana White's confirmed Diaz has one more fight on his UFC contract, but he is allegedly moving on after that. Bellator commenter Josh Thompson said that Diaz will fight under the UFC, but this will be his last, and Dana White confirmed this is his last one on his contract, and then he's going to move on, and reportedly Jake Paul.
I'll pay for that. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, everyone's going to pay for people are going to continue to pay for these Jake Paul fights because they're entertaining. If you're a boxing purist, I get why you hate it. I like entertaining things, and it's still a fight, so I would pay for it too, but Jake Paul's reportedly going to fight Tommy Fury on December 18th, so that will be the next one in line for him.
All right. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Lie News.
All right, we get lucky on Tuesdays. Last week, he had laryngitis because he's doing all these great games and he's saying amazing things. And Mark Sanchez is now joining us. Fox Sports NFL analyst is joining us. Let's bring on Mark, who, by the way, last week you had the Lions-Rams game. This week, right. Panthers-Falcons.
That's right.
And so, by the way, let's go. I want to talk Lions-Rams. Let's start with that because that was really an interesting game. Dan Campbell
brought
out everything.
It,
I mean, I'll tell you this. We said this. I didn't like the David Culley hire and the Nick Sirianni hire. And I didn't love the Dan Campbell hire. But that team, they don't look – they had Baltimore dead to rights.
Yeah.
They out-coached – Campbell out-coached Sean McVay for three quarters. So it's like, have you ever been on a team that you weren't winning games, but you knew you were better than your record?
But you're close. They're definitely better than their record. They had Minnesota on the ropes, too, and lost on the last second field goal. So
yes, they did.
It's the problem is, at the end of the day, okay, that last interception from Jared Goff,
killer.
I thought was the microcosm, and like it just encapsulated everything that had transpired with Stafford, Goff, this whole thing, right? Who gets pressure? Aaron Donald. Who picks it off? Jalen Ramsey. And we're in the booth, and I just put my hands on my face, and I was like, no. No, there's no way it went down like that. But then I had to smack myself and be like, of course it went down like that. It's not the X's and O's. It's the Johnnies and Joes. Okay, those two guys are, you know, generational type talent players. And that's what they have. You look at the Lions roster, it's just not the same. And yeah. So Jared's margin for error was zero, almost zero.
Yeah.
Okay? And they don't have a speedster at receiver. I didn't see a ton from Amon-Ra St. Brown, and that's not really his fault. I just didn't see him dialed up. They're finally getting DeAndre Swift going. He's finally healthy. So it's a personnel thing, and they need to surround him with some talent if they want to get his ceiling.
So you have Atlanta this week.
Correct.
And so now you're starting to look at film. So, listen, Kyle Pitts was obviously generationally looked like a very unique talent. And in the last couple of weeks, wow.
He's really come on.
And I think I was telling Joy or somebody, I said, I wouldn't be shocked because they have a new offensive coach and they had Kyle Pitts. And I'm like, and I was one of those who said, keep Matt for two more years. Mm-hmm. You got to get Kyle Pitts in the franchise. Just get him. Yep. There'll never be a tight end like this available. And what do you mean? Because I have this weird, there's a team every year, Mark. November, they don't look like anything and they get hot. Is it Atlanta?
That's just, well, I mean, who else in the division is really going to run it, right? The Saints?
No.
Just because of their defense, like they might be able to hang on. Carolina?
No.
I mean, they dropped four in a row because of their running back out, McCaffrey out, and that offense runs through him, just like this offense in Atlanta is going to run through Kyle Pitts.
You didn't hit, you had tight ends, but what do you make of Pitts? Mm. What does he do? What does a great tight end do for a quarterback?
Well, he's not a blocker, but he can split out, and they're doing a great job. Dave Ragone, their offense coordinator, is doing an excellent job of just moving him and making matchups for him. And you can see, I went to their practice a couple weeks ago, and I'll go again on Friday. But him and Matt, I mean, they don't separate each other. During red zone walkthroughs while the defense is going, like Matt is a coach in cleats at a certain point, and they're showing him every look. All the offensive assistants, all the ball boys, all the guys in the – they're building the defense so he can run the routes versus every look he's going to see, right? And they're just trying to get him up to speed. And it's almost like, you know, one of those, like, puppies with really big paws and you can't – you know he's got the potential and he's just trying to figure it out and he's just excited. That's Pitts. I mean, he's got it all, just oozing with talent. And they just want to catch him up to speed as fast as they can. And they have one of the best processors in the game in Matt Ryan to do that with him. So he's literally giving him a TED talk every day of quick bullet points. And I asked Matt in the production meeting, I said, it's hard because you don't want to overload him. And he said, no, that's it. That's exactly it. You want to show him a couple different looks. Here's what we're most likely get. Here's our contingency plan if we don't. That's all you got to worry about, kid. That's it. Because I want you to play fast. I don't want you thinking out there. I want you to just go react.
Yeah.
And so that's where they're getting him. And I mean, that offense, 1, 2, and 3 in their progression is Kyle Pitts. Right. After that, it's, okay, find Ridley, find somebody else. But he's the man.
So it was really interesting. We know Belichick doesn't love the Jets. We get that. But it felt different. And it was I said this yesterday. I theorized, was Bill selling his team to his team? Was Bill saying, okay, we should have beat Dallas. We beat Houston. We crushed the Jets. Is Bill like, I'm going to pour it on. I don't want you to think we're a have-not, because that when you're doing play action, leading by 30, that felt different.
I think it was, to be totally honest, I don't think it had anything to do with the Jets. It happened to be the Jets. He's thinking, we got to get this on tape. Like, not for other teams, but for our guys. Let's just use the reps. We're playing well. We're finally doing it. We're clicking on all cylinders. Max playing well. This is like an extra practice for us at a certain point. I really believe that, that he's not trying to run it up. It could have been anybody, the Panthers, the Texans. It doesn't matter. He would have done the same thing because he just wants his guys to feel it, to see it. He's got the coaching tape, the teach tape that you watch at the end of the year. And you're like, hey, remember when you got to number four on that play action in New York week seven? This is what it looks like. Those are the tapes you put together at the end of the year to reinstall the offense next year. And I really think that was like a building block for him. And he is completely process and journey oriented, not the destination, right? Not the final score oriented. That's not who he is. He's all about the process. And that process will set us up for success, but it won't guarantee success. I think it was that. I don't think he was just trying to run it up.
So I the game that really...
But he probably liked it.
Yeah. The game that really I was kind of shocked by, I mean, I had said to Joy last week is I could see two outcomes, Chiefs-Tennessee, so it didn't surprise me. One of the outcomes was they can't get him off the field, King Henry.
Yeah.
The game that I was shocked with was the data told you that Philadelphia could play with the Raiders, and it was just bad. Like the Raiders' O and D lines dominated. And I watched the Jalen Hurts thing. And I said this a couple of weeks ago. When it comes to quarterbacks who are young, it really helps if you have you can move around because you can buy about a year and a half of yards while you figure out the complexities.
Year and a half of yards.
Yeah, you can figure out, you know, you can just, you know, get. And, but I watched Jalen Hurts, and boy, I don't know. What do you see in the development? What am I supposed to see here?
He's always played with top talent, right? In college, at Bama, at Oklahoma. He's always had some of the best guys. I never thought he was a franchise guy that you're going to hang your hat on. That was just me personally, talent-wise and ceiling-wise. I don't think he's there. I thought he was a better version of what they do with Taysom Hill. I really did.
Yeah.
And I think until you get him legitimate players around him, like who in there, other than Devontae Smith, who's young, he's figuring it out, who can win consistently versus man-to-man? I mean, the guys they have right now are gadget guys. They're catch-and-run guys. It's the same problem in Carolina. They're catch and run guys. They're not, hey, this is a dog. You're going to either double him or he's going to beat you one-on-one in the slot, outside, wherever we put him. He's our number one on third down and red zone. Like you need guys, Devontae Adams, for example, Hopkins, AJ Green, like those guys, they hang their hat on them. On third down and red zone, you know where it's going and you still can't stop them. They don't have that right now. And I think Devontae Smith will get there Devontae Smith will get there, but they need more and they can't protect him. You know, so what are you going to do?
Yeah. All right, stay there. I've got a question, and I want you to take me through what Green Bay will be facing on Thursday. So stick around, Mark Sanchez.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Hey, it's me, Rob Parker. Check out my weekly MLB podcast, Inside the Parker, for 22 minutes of piping hot baseball talk featuring the biggest names and newsmakers in the sport. Whether you believe in analytics or the eye test, we've got all the bases covered. New episodes drop every Thursday, so do yourself a favor and listen to Inside the Parker with Rob Parker on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, Mark Sanchez joining us. So your Green Bay, Devontae Adams can't play, so I got means he can't practice, I guess. Here's my question. So you're Matt LaFleur, and they're very... I mean, Devontae, there's not a team in the league that depends on one receiver more than Green Bay.
True.
So is your game plan, if you're the quarterback and I don't have Devontae Adams, is your game plan, all right, my second, third guys, I'm just going to ask you to make plays you haven't before? Or do you go to a very run-based offense? What happens in your career when you lose a star to position?
Yeah.
Do you just ask the two, three, and four receivers, I'm going to ask more from you?
They're going to get... you know, more on their plate naturally. And this is one of those games where I can already see Aaron's smirk after the game. Like, yeah, we did it without him and beat an undefeated team. You know, like that's, he'll put that on himself because he's such a competitor. And yeah, separation's not going to be, you know, quite as good. He's not going to be able to throw up the blind jump ball just because he knows this guy's going to get it. But I mean, anybody who was in where Devontae was last week when he threw that ball across his body on that naked, he's all the way out of the pocket and almost like twist the upper part of his body off, like a Coke top or something. I mean, whoever's in that position is going to catch that ball and score.
Yeah.
Right? So I think everybody else is just going to have to shoulder the load. I would not be surprised if the tight ends get a little more involved. It'll be like the San Francisco game early in the year where the halfback had a ton of yards. He had over 100 yards receiving.
Yeah.
That I would not be shocked to see that.
You know, it's funny. I want to talk Joe Burrow for a second because he doesn't have a huge arm. He's not running around. And I always said he reminds me a little bit of Romo. He's kind of B-plus at everything. But, I mean, his numbers through 17 games is like 97 passer rating, you know, 30 TDs, 7 picks. But one of my things when he came out of college was, well, LSU had more talent. It was like a USC talent.
Right.
And the other thing was arm's okay. You know, he runs around a little. His body's okay. You know, you're not big
right,
shoulder.
Right.
And I was just like, everybody's telling me he's like Brady. And I'm like, I don't know. So you tell me what you see, because through 17 games, his numbers with a shaky O-line are fantastic.
Oh, he's elevating that team.
No question.
And as a second-year guy in his 17th start, that's impressive.
I mean,
they have two legitimate receivers. He gets the ball out fast. He processes the right way. And his learning curve, I mean, he got through it so much faster, or he seems to be getting through it so much faster because of the way he works, because of the way his brain works. Like, I asked him, we had him earlier in the year he threw three interceptions back-to-back-to-back plays, remember?
Yeah.
And I was like, that couldn't have happened since, like, you know, 1950 or something. I mean, that's crazy. And it ended up happening in, like, 17 or 14 or so. I was shocked. But, I mean, he's one of those guys who can complete amnesia, just move on to the next play. Like, emotionless, almost robotic.
Andrew Luck was a little like that.
A lot like that. But I asked him about his pie chart of life. Like, some people use the bucket analogy. Like, how much are you putting in your family bucket and your, you know, social bucket and this, that, and the other. I said, the pie chart to your life, there's probably like a tiny sliver for like family, friends, and like video games. I feel like you play a little video games. And then the rest is just a giant Pac-Man with an almost closed mouth of football.
Right.
And he goes, he just kind of smiled and he's like, yeah, that's pretty much it. I said, I know, dude, you're like, you know, the Terminator quarterback version. Like, he's just
dialed in.
That dialed.
That's a lot of Brady.
And that's totally Brady, complete dedication, willing to sacrifice and give up a lot of things. Isn't a me guy, you know, loves to deflect the other stuff, loves to remind people. Like, did you see the way he stuck up for his receiver? He walked into a press conference. He's like, isn't that guy that was dropping all those balls? like this is my guy. You know, like, my side of the street versus anybody. Like, let's go. I'm a loyal dog. Let's rock. You know, that's who he is. And you know, players love playing for guys like that. And you could tell they'll exert themselves. They'll do a little extra. They'll hold up on that block for just a tick longer.
There's no question.
Because it's Joe.
Absolutely.
And they love him.
By the way, Mike Tomlin asked about the USC job. So let's play the tape of Mike Tomlin, Steelers coach, asked about the USC job.
Hey, guys, I don't have time for that speculation. I mean, that's a joke to me. I got one of the best jobs in all of professional sport. Why would I have any interest in coaching college football? That'll be the last time that I address it. And not only today, but moving forward. Never say never, but never. Okay? Anybody else got any questions about any college jobs? There's not a booster with a big enough blank check.
Anyone else? All right.
Thank you. Anybody asking Sean Payton about that? You know, anybody asking Andy Reid about stuff like that?
Yeah, he would not real happy.
Job, Carson.
Yeah. But it's funny. I heard USC fans going, we got into this. The answer in life is almost never in the rearview mirror. So everybody, Pete Carroll. And I'm like, no, Pete Carroll at 51 had been fired, had a lot to prove. Pete Carroll at 70 with $70 million in the bank, already won a natty. Now you have a second recruiting period. I'm like, yeah, you're not getting the same Pete at 70 at 51, who was, by the way, a lot of people laughed at that hire, mocked that hire.
Oh, yeah.
Now Pete had stuff to prove. His career was like, he had to like reboot Pete Carroll.
Yeah.
So I don't know. What is the answer to you?
I think they're going to make a run at a lot of coaches, big name coaches that people are like, no way they would leave. Just like the Tomlins of the world, the Andy Reids of the world, just to make them say no. Just to see if anybody has a little bit of interest. Just let me show you what LA has for you, just in case. And after that, I bet you they have a short list of guys. Maybe the you know, coordinators or the up and coming, because they're trying to find somebody who can connect enough. It's a unique position, right? Who can connect enough with the young guys, but has enough cachet the way Lincoln Riley was groomed after Stoops to kind of take over, right? And we don't really have that right now. So unless you go with somebody like Graham Harrell, who's young. So I don't know. I think they're going to make a lot of people say no. I mean, I would not be shocked if they took a flyer on the Sabins, the Sweeneys, that like, just to see, hey, return our call. You know what I mean? Make them say no.
College or pro, who would you hire?
Oof. I don't know if anybody in the pro ranks is going to want to go back.
No, college football.
You know, like I thought maybe Joe Brady.
Now he looks 11, but I thought that was interesting. He does look really young.
I know. I just don't think he'll leave because what this new recruiting stuff.
I mean,
it's the same thing you said. You need someone that's hungry, that understands or has something in place already, and they know how to handle it. But not somebody who's new to the game. Like, I mean, that is a 24/7 gig now, and. I don't know. The name, image, and likeness here in LA sells itself. So that's great. But you got to go convince all these young kids, man. That's hard. Ugh. That's a lot of work.
It is. Mark, great seeing you. You're doing phenomenal work. Order Jersey Mike's on your mobile app. Limited time. Free delivery on game day Saturdays. When you order through the app, Jersey Mike's, be a sub above. All right. You deliver every time. Speak for Yourself is around the corner. Mark's calling the Panthers-Falcons on Sunday at 1 Eastern on Fox. Better schedule this weekend. And, God, it'll be better than last night because that was unwatchable football. We'll see you tomorrow.